Morning. Today's daf in Erevin, daf Pei Beis. We're going to, God willing, finish the seventh parak of Erevin today and begin the eighth parak of Erevin. In what we've been doing yesterday, we talked about making a kinyan on your Erev Chatzeres. Erev Chatzeres requires that everyone be a contributor towards a loaf of bread. We learned yesterday's daf that it's got to be a whole loaf of bread. It cannot be a prusa, cannot be a cut loaf of bread, a slice of bread, that's not good. It has to be a whole loaf of bread. The reason why, explained the Gemara in yesterday's daf, is because of Eva, because of animosity, ill will that's created between members of the chatzer. If one person's giving a whole loaf of bread and the other person's giving only a half a loaf of a bread, so therefore a certain standardization was created by the chachamim so that everyone would be participating and give a whole loaf of bread. So that was part one of yesterday's daf. We talked about bread. The definition of bread regarding your Erev Chatzeres, there's a looser definition of bread. Doesn't have to be mechamishas aminim, doesn't have to be of the five grains. It could be of rice, possibly of millet, of lentil. Those breads are also going to be acceptable as well. And then the Mishnah on the bottom of Pei Aleph Amud Aleph talked about buying a bread for Erev Chatzeres. Now it's pretty straightforward. In other words, what you'll do is you go to the Chenvani, you go to this local merchant, you go to the local baker and you say to them, I'd like to buy some bread and do me a favor. Don't even bother giving me the bread. Just simply, here's money, whatever bread I just bought, bring it over to the whoever's housing the Erev Chatzeres and contribute on my behalf. Sounds like a good plan. And the Mishnah says it's not going to work, but for really a technicality. What's the technicality in the Mishnah? The problem is that I had to make a kinyan on the bread. What I do, I gave money. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, money by itself, although min haTorah money works, and money will act as a kinyan, but the Chachamim stepped in, and the Chachamim were interested in protecting the buyer, and therefore the Chachamim said that a kinyan is not effective until I do a Mashiach, until I do I actually pick up the loaf of bread and pull it in towards my direction. So it's a technical problem. You didn't make a kinyan on the bread. We spent some time yesterday trying to understand the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer is that in such a scenario it would work, according to Rabbi Eliezer. And the Gemara says, yeah, but you didn't make a kinyan. And so the Gemara attempted to give an explanation in order to help us understand the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. However, the accepted position is that you have to do a kinyan on the bread. That is all what we saw in yesterday's daf. We're on Pei Aleph Amud Beis. We're at the two dots, just a little bit below the midpoint of the daf. The Gemara over there goes on to discuss. Oh, okay. Sorry, I just noticed a leak. Okay, fine. It's a small leak. Okay, we're at the two dots of the Gemara. Umod b'shar kol adam. Now, and I did this line of the Mishnah yesterday, so I glossed over this line of the Mishnah, as the Mishnah is not extraordinarily clear what exactly it's talking about. If you look back, just quickly turn the page back to Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, and you look at the bottom of the Amud, Chachamim Amar lo zachol ma'osav, your money's not going to work. And then the Mishnah says on the very top, Pei Aleph Amud Beis, Omodim, but the Chachamim will agree in the following scenario. Bishar kol ha'adam, when it comes to any other person, shizachol lo ma'osav, that your money is going to work. Okay, now, who's any other person?
That's...
So it was not clear in the Mishnah, and now the Gemara is going to discuss this very quickly. So Manchar Kaladam, so the Gemara asked the simple question, who is the Mishnah even talking about? So Amar Rav Bal Habayis, V'chena Mashmo Bal Habayis. So in other words, you're buying bread, not from a commercial, a person who's interested in commerce, but in other words, your neighbor, anybody. Anybody who's not in the commercial business of selling bread. In other words, so I go over to Ben and I say to Ben, hi, do me a favor. Can you give bread on my behalf? And I give him money. So under those circumstances, it would work. Now, the only time the Chachamim say it's not going to work is if I go to the Nachtam, if I go to the baker. There wouldn't work. But if I go to anybody else, it would work. Now, why would that be? So the simple explanation would be, because when I go to the baker, it's understood that he's commercial. Meaning the whole idea is that I'm going to buy bread from him. So the money is there as a means of me attempting to buy. But again, we could run back to that same problem that we discussed in the beginning of the daf. Money by itself is not kona. I have to do a mashicha. I didn't do a mashicha. Therefore, it creates a problem. It's not my bread. Okay. But when I go to my friend, so at that point in time, the assumption is that this is not commercial. This is not a commercial transaction. In other words, I'm basically, what's the money? The money is there to make sure that he does it. Meaning maybe the money is there as a minu shlichus, as an appointment to the shlichus. But I'm not buying the bread from him. It's my friend. It's a baal bais. In other words, he'll give the bread on my behalf. It's just, right. It does look like a transaction, but the understanding is that he's not a baker. He's a baal bais. And so therefore, under such circumstances, it would work. And another thing, let's even go back to the case of the baker. Now, in the case of the baker, where I gave him money, what do we say? That's no good, because money doesn't acquire. Okay, but what if instead of giving him money, so I give him my tie, or I give him a pen, I give him an item, and I say, could we exchange item for bread? And then, and obviously, don't give me the bread, but give the bread over to the house of the Erev Chatzeres. Is that going to work? So he says, yeah, in that case, it's going to work. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi explains why money doesn't work, but giving him a pen, that would work. So Rashi says, absolutely. Yes. Right? That's a Kenyan. I'm looking for Rashi. I'm sorry. Right? It's a short Rashi. Avakli Kenyan Sudar. Rashi says that a Kli would work because a Kli basically acts as a Kenyan Sudar. Kenyan Sudar, which we'll talk much more about as we get into the Babas. Bab Mitzia. Where basically we swap. On the swap, I give him an item, and when I give him an item, and I'm swapping for another item, I'm kona the item of swap immediately. So when I give him that pen, or when I give him the tie, and we exchange the bread, even though they're not exactly equivalent in value, it does not matter, by Kenyan Sudar, but once I give him the tie, once I give him the pen, at that point in time, immediately, I'm kona the bread. And so there, it's obviously, even by the baker, would work. And one other point, says the Gemara, V'amr Shmuel, Lo shanu ala d'amr lo zachali, ava amr arevli, shlich shavi v'kane. Another point to consider. Let's go back to the case of the baker. If I say to the baker, here's money, and I want to buy bread with the money, zachali, so that's not going to work, because again, it's money. Money by itself is not kona. I need to do mashicha. The bread's not mine. Therefore, it's not going to work. But instead of saying the word zachali, I say to him, arevli, do me a favor. I want you to make an error for me. Here's money, but the money's not for the bread. Again, what are we going to say regarding the money? Minu ishlichus. I'm just making sure that he's going to act as my agent. The money's just there to secure him as my agent. But the money's not for the bread. The bread... That's a favor between you and me. You want to be kona the bread on my behalf, fine. But in other words, the money's not for the bread, the money's for the shlichus. So in that case, even by the baker, it would work as well. So the Gemara just gave us three very quick qualifications of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if I go give money to the baker and say, here's money for bread. Now, could you take my bread and contribute it for my Erev? So the Mishnah says, again, Rabbi Elazar disagrees, but let's just focus on the Chachamim. Chachamim say it's not going to work. The reason why is very simply because we hold like Rabbi Yochanan, Maus by itself is not Kona, so therefore you didn't acquire the bread. The bread doesn't belong to you. You're not being Ma'ariv with your bread. Okay? And on that. Number one, if I go to a Baal Bais instead of a baker, it would work. Right? Because the Baal Bais is presumably not selling you the bread, but the money's for Shlichas. Number two, is that if instead of money, I give the baker a kli, that works because if that's a Kenyan Sudar, it's not Kenyan Kesef. Number three, even if I give money to the baker, but instead of saying Zachali, I say Arevli, that also would work because clearly I'm not interested in buying the bread with the money. The money's just simply there as an appointment of Shlichus. Okay, moving on in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'med var mamurim. And then we had a line in our Mishnah, right? Then the very next line in the Mishnah talks about consent. The Mishnah says that if I want to make an erev on behalf of somebody else, I need his consent. Then along comes Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah, and says, "Bamedvar mamurim." Now those are critical words, and you'll see later on in the daf why those are such critical words. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda and says, "When is that true? That I need consent? That's only in Erev Tchum, but not by Erev Chatzeros. Why not by Erev Chatzeros? Because of the principle of Zachon La'adam Shlo Befanav, meaning because by Erev Chatzeros, there's nothing to lose. We've gone over this argument already a number of times. Erev Chatzeros, it's all gain, there's no loss. By the installment of the Erev Chatzeros in our community, in our Chatzer, everybody will not be allowed to carry from the house to the Chatzer, from the Chatzer to somebody else's house. So consequently, it's all gain, there's no loss. So therefore, I don't need anyone's consent because of this principle of Zachon La'adam Shlo Befanav. When it comes to Erev Tchum, however, even though I gain in one direction, I'm going to lose in another direction. All I'm doing by Erev Tchum is just moving my point of center. So therefore, there's always going to be a gain, but there's also always going to be a loss. So if there's profit and loss, so then that's not Zachon La'adam Shlo Befanav, because that's a Zechus and a Chova. Right? That's a profit and a liability. So there, I need the person's consent. But when it comes to Erev Chatzeros, I don't need the consent. Good. That's our Mishnah. Now, from this point on going forward, we're going to call that the Mishnah on Pei Aleph, because it's a Mishnah found on Daf Pei Aleph. You'll see where I'm going in just a moment. Lost my place. I'm back. I'm Rav Yehuda by Medvar Mamor. I'm Rav Yehuda. I'm Rishma Halacha K'Rav Yehuda. So first of all, Psak. The Psak Halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So that by Erev Chatzeros, it is a Zchus. And we say, Zach La'adam Shlo Befanav. And that's in fact the halacha. Now again, before going into this gemara, we already knew that. As I pointed out already a number of times, none of us in this community received a phone call asking us, do we grant permission for an Erev contribution on our behalf? No, nobody here was asked. Don't worry, I wasn't either. So, and how does it work? Because of this principle, Zachon La'adam Shlo Befanav. So we knew the halacha was like Rav Yehuda. V'lo od. But Rav Yehuda Mishmo goes one step further. Any time that we have a sheet of Rav Yehuda within Masechta Erevin, the halacha is in fact like Rav Yehuda. Okay. The Hemshech of the Gemara is going to clarify your very point. So Amalei Rav Chana Begdas Ala Rav Yehuda Mishmo Afila B'Mavu Shenit L'Karasov L'Chayav. Well, what about the following? We had this earlier. Let's say I have a Mavui. Mavui is open up to Rishus HaRabim. In order to carry in the Mavui, I need to fix the fourth side of the Mavui, the one that's totally open up into the Rishus HaRabim. How are we misakin, as we discussed in the first parak of Erevin, either with a Lechi or a Korah? Let's say on any given Shabbos, we have a Lechi or Korah already set up going into Shabbos. On Shabbos, what happens? The Lechi comes down. The Korah comes down. So, are we going to fall like Rav Yehuda over there? So, Amalei be'eruv and amarti lach v'lo b'mechitzos. So, even though Rav Yehuda is mekel over there, but we don't fall like him. Even though we just said that wherever you see Rav Yehuda, the halacha falls like him, that's by eruvin, but not by mechitzos. Right? I think one of the biggest misnomers and the biggest misconceptions is that when people say eruv, they're talking about the strings in the pole. The strings in the pole is not the Erev. Colloquially, we call it the Erev. But if we're a little bit more informed, which we are, so we know that's not the Erev. That's just simply a way of enclosing the area, making that now, that area, Rishus HaYachid. The Erev is the contribution that everyone gives. That's the Erev. So when we say the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, that's in terms of the halachas of the Erev, meaning the bread that's being contributed. But in terms of mechitzos, which are the walls used to enclose the area, and in the case of the mavui, that fourth wall is very minimal. It's either a lechi or it's a korah. But if it comes down on Shabbos, we lose the right to carry within that mavui. Okay, so far so good. We have now concluded that the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Yehuda, that Zachon La'adam Shlo Befanav, and therefore by Erev Chatzeros, so I can contribute on behalf of somebody else, even without his consent. So far, so good. Now, we said that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, as if there's anyone arguing with Rabbi Yehuda. If you look at this Mishnah that we've been now sitting on for 2 days, right, that started on the bottom of Pei Aleph Amud Aleph and continued to the top of Pei Aleph Amud Beis, one can make a very simple argument. Rabbi Yehuda's not arguing with anybody, meaning Rav Yehuda says, "Bamedvar Mamor, when is the supply?" It could very well be that Rav Yehuda is not arguing with the Tanna Kamma, but just simply explaining the Tanna Kamma. Now, if that's true, so then why is a psak necessary? We're going to paskin like Rav Yehuda, as if somebody's arguing with Rav Yehuda. May not be true. This is what bothers the Gemara now. So, so the Gemara says, by you saying the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, makes it sound like we're in the middle of a debate, and we have to side with like one opinion. Well, who are we siding like? So, Rav Yehuda ben Levi, Rav Yehuda Masayu v'meh, b'mishna senu enu ela lefaresh divrei chachamim. So the Gemara says, look, here's a rule. A rule given to us by Rav Yehuda ben Levi. And that is that whenever you have a Mishnah, and Rav Yehuda comes in, and he says, Eimasai, or he says, Bamedvar Mamorim, that's not arguing with the Tanna Kamma. That's just simply an explanation of the Tanna Kamma. Okay? Meaning, I know the Tanna Kamma is only limited to this circumstance, but not to that circumstance. Like our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that there has to be consent by Erevin. Rav Yehuda says, not by all Erevin, only by Erev Tchum, not by Erev Chatzeros. So what comes out is that in our Mishnah, at least according to Rav Yehuda and Levi, Rav Yehuda is not arguing with the Tanna Kamma. And if that's true, so then why are we paskening? Halacha is going like Rav Yehuda. He's not arguing with anybody. So the Gemara says, "V'lo pligi v'hanan tanan." So the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. You may be right. In our Mishnah on Pei Aleph, Rav Yehuda is not arguing with the Tanna Kamma. I'll even give you that. But let's go back to yesterday's daf, or 2 days ago. Daf Pei, what do we have over there? We had the scenario where Mitosfu, right? I'm going to go back to the Mishnah on Daf Pei Amud Beis, 80b. The Mishnah over there says, what happens if I have new residents moving into the community? Mitosfu Aleihem, Mosif, V'sarach Lahodia. Mishnah back on Pei says that if I have new people coming into the community, they need notification, which presumably means we need their consent. So you're right. The Mishnah on Pei Aleph, it could be that Rav Yehuda is only coming to explain the Tanna Kamma. I'll give you that. The Mishnah on Daf Pei, however, talks about new residents moving into the community, and the Mishnah over there expresses the position, I got to notify them because I need their consent. So it is a machlokas. Maybe not within the Mishnah on Pei Aleph, but certainly between the Mishnayos of Pei Aleph and Daf Pei. So Vitzarach Lahodia, Hasam. So the Gemara over there tries to deflect. Maybe not. Maybe there is no machlokas between the two Mishnayos, which are separated by only one Daf. Maybe the Mishnah on Daf Pei bechatzar shebein shnei mevavos. Maybe over there it's a very specific scenario where it's not necessarily a zichus. Remember, we spoke about this a couple days ago, where over there, that particular chatzar is situated between two mavois. And over there, an eruv for that chatzar would be the determination of which mavui are we going to go to? Mavui to the left or mavui to the right? Maybe, if we don't ask them for permission, maybe they didn't want to go down to the mavui on the left. Maybe they prefer the mavui on the right. So in that very limited circumstance, one can make the argument, that's not a zichos, because you're basically telling them which mavui to use. That Mishnah Daf Pei, that's not a case of zachin. Our Mishnah on Pei Aleph is not where there is a option of which mavui we're going to go down. Our Mishnah Daf Pei Aleph is just simply all things being equal. When this Erev that's set up for us is not going to determine for us which mavui we're going to go down. It's a very simple scenario of, I'm going to be able to carry from my house to the chatzir. Zachin la'adam shol b'fanav. So maybe the two Mishnayos are not arguing with one another. V'hamarav shiz b'hamarav chisazos amarav chalukin alav chaver Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's remind ourselves of what we learned on Daf Pei Amud Beis immediately after the Mishnah, which is that the opinion of Rav Shizbi is, there is a machlokas between the Mishnah on Daf Pei and the Mishnah on Daf Pei Aleph. Rav Yehuda on Pei Aleph is arguing with the Mishnah on Daf Pei. So Ella, so the Gemara says, Ella, Gavra Agavra Karamis, Marsavra Pligi, Marsavra Lo Pligi. So the Gemara says, look, when all said and done, Everyone's entitled to an opinion, meaning if you're on the same, if you're on the same level. So good. So Rav Shizbi's of the position that the two Mishnayos, Daf Pei and Daf Pei Aleph, are necessarily arguing with one another. Good. That's his position. But it could very well be that you could take the position that there is no machlokus between the Mishnah and Daf Pei and the Mishnah and Daf Pei Aleph. The Mishnah and Daf Pei talks about consent and a need to go over there and receive consent from the new residents of the community. That could be the limited scenario where the chatzar is opening up to two mavuis, and therefore it's a chova. But it could very well be that if the case were that there is no chova whatsoever, there's no liability, and there's all zechus, so therefore the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. And it's not that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, it's that nobody's arguing with the position Rav Yehuda, which in fact is zach la'adam shalom b'fanav, in a simple case of a ruve chatzeres. Okay, what comes out from all this, I understand that was a little bit confusing. What comes out over here is basically the following. Bottom line is that we go like Rav Yehuda. And that in the simple case of Erev Chatzir, Zach L'Adam Shalom B'Fanav. Is Rav Yehuda arguing with another Tana? Maybe, maybe not. Okay? Various opinions. Right? It could very well be that Rav Yehuda, first of all, within our Mishnah, is not arguing with the Tana Kama, but simply explain the Tana Kama. Could also be that Rav Yehuda is not even arguing with the previous Mishnah, Daf Pei. The previous Mishnah, Daf Pei, was talking about a scenario where it was not only a Zechus, but with a built-in Chova, because the Erev would have to determine for that middle Chatzer which Mavu they're going to go down. But in a simple case, Zachin. Or, what you could also simply say is that Rav Yehuda of our Mishnah is in fact arguing with the previous Mishnah, which is fine. And then we're going to side like Rav Yehuda. Either way comes out, the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. Okay, Gufa. We're in the very top of Pei Beis Amud Aleph, and the Gemara is just going to take us through a short tangent of where else in Shas do we see this. That when Rav Yehuda is coming in a Mishnah with an introductory clause of either Bamedvar Mamorim or Bamedvar Mamorim or Amasai. So if he prefaces his remarks with either one of those phrases, he's not arguing with the Tana Kama, he's just simply explaining the Tana Kama. The Gemara says, let's go to a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Third parak of Sanhedrin, the Mishnah over there says, well, let's do it inside the Gemara first. Gufam Rav Yishuv Malevi Kol Malkum Shammah Rav Yehuda Emasai Ovabem Mishnah Seinu Eino Ela Lafarish Divir Chachamim. So according to the opinion of Yishuv and Levi, if Rav Yehuda's words are prefaced with either Emasai or Bamedvar Mamurim, that's him, Rav Yehuda, explaining the Tanna Kamma, not arguing with the Tanna Kamma. Then the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan has a somewhat dissenting opinion. Amar Emasai Lefaresh, Bamedvar Mamurim Lachlok. Depends. If he introduces his statement with the words Emasai, that in fact is a explanation of the Tana Kama. But if he opens up with Bamedvar Mamurim, so that means he's arguing with the Tana Kama, not explaining the Tana Kama. Okay, so just make sure that we all got it straight. Rav Yehuda comes up in a Mishnah, and he either says Emasai Bamedvar Mamurim. We have a debate amongst the Amorayim. Is he agreeing with the Tana Kama and just simply modifying, or arguing with the Tana Kama? According to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, he's agreeing. According to Rav Yochanan, it depends. Amasai, agreeing. Bamedvar Mamurim, arguing. Good. Those are the opinions. Then Vahatanan, then the Gemara quotes the Mishnah in the third parak of Sanhedrin. Ve'elu heina psulim. Who cannot testify? And if I remember Rashi correctly over there in the Gemara, who can't testify and also who can't be a judge? Meaning, who can't be part of the judicial process? Now basically, we start off with the following. This is what the Mishnah assumes we already know. If you're a Rasha, you can't be part of the judicial process. What's the definition of Rasha? So the Gemara over there has a discussion, but if I remember correctly, the Gemara's conclusion over there is that if you violate a law in the Torah willfully, you cannot be part of the judicial process. Okay, that already puts you in the category of a Rasha, and so therefore you can't be a judge and you cannot be a witness. Okay? Furthermore, and this is where the Mishnah now picks up, not only if you willfully violate an Isser in the Torah, but also if you show a strong desire for money. Now we all have a desire for money, but that's so that we can live. In other words, a strong desire for money is indicated by the person who is ready to bend the rules, even though he's not in full violation of the Torah, but he's ready to bend the rules in order to gain, in order to have monetary gain. And the Mishnah over here is going to be discussing who are some of these people. Give me examples of these people who show such a desire for money, they're ready to bend the rules a little bit in order to gain that money. Now, the trick of this Mishnah is that in all these cases, we're going to have to explain how it's not a full-blown violation of the Torah. Because if it's a full-blown violation of the Torah, so we're back to the problem of he's a Rasha. And he can't. So that's the trick of the Mishnah. We're not learning Sanhedrin right now, so we're not going to go through right now all the nuanced discussion of how is he not, how is this not a blatant violation of the Torah? Okay, the Gemara in Sanhedrin goes through all that discussion. We're just going to go through the Mishnah inside. Again, we're only bringing up this Mishnah right now just for the very specific point that Rav Yehuda is going to be introduced in this Mishnah. He's going to be introduced with the words Amasai, and the subsequent discussion, is he explaining the Tanna Kamma or is he arguing with the Tanna Kamma? Now remember, Amasai, according to everybody, meaning both according to Rav Shimon Levi and according to Rav Yochanan, should be there as an explanation, not as an argument. Okay, let's see the Mishnah inside. V'atanan ve'elo n'psulin, these are the people who are disqualified to be part of the judicial process. Hamasachik b'kobya, gambler. Gambler cannot be a witness. And by the way, I'm sure I made this point, but let me make sure I made this point clear. It's obvious. Why can't these people be part of the judicial process? Because since they show such a desire for money, so therefore we're concerned that they may be for a small nominal fee, they may take a bribe. Or even if it's not a small nominal fee, meaning but they are bribable. And obviously what we want when we want judges and we want witnesses are people who, you know, we think are going to be solid, honest citizens. So number one, says the Mishnah over there, is the gambler. Number two, Malva Barib, is someone who lends with interest. The obvious question. Someone who lends with interest. Isn't that a violation of the Torah? Why is he someone who's quote-unquote bending the rules to gain money? He's not bending the rules. It's a violation of the Torah. So again, when we get to Sanhedrin, God willing, so we're going to ask that question again, and we're going to give a full answer. Mafricha Yonim is a pigeon racer, or if you know, and if you want to translate it into more modern terms, right, horse racing, which I know sounds a lot like gambling. The Gemara in Sanhedrin over there says, what's the difference between Mafricha Yonim and Stachy Bekubya? And finally, Sochrei Shvius, all the fruit that grow during the Shemitah year. Fruit that grow during the Shemitah year, they grow organically, meaning you don't work the land. You're not allowed to work the land during the Shemitah year. But still, your trees are still going to be producing fruit every year. The fruit that come off that tree during the Shemitah year have Kedushas Shvius. They have the sanctity of Shvius, which means that there's only one thing you could do with that fruit, eat it. You cannot do any type of commerce with that fruit, right? It always comes up after the Shemitah year, right? How am I selling the Esrog? So everyone know the answer? Right, it's right. It's the Esrog is a bonus.
But isn't that also a Daraisa?
So that is also an Issa Daraisa. That's an excellent question. And again, in Sanhedrin, the Gemara over there takes up that issue of how is that not a full-blown violation of the Torah. Okay, so those are your categories of people who show a strong desire for money. They bend the rules in order to gain profit. Amar Rav Yehuda. Now along comes Rav Yehuda in that Mishnah in Sanhedrin and says, Amasai, when is all this true? When is your gambler, pigeon racer, lender with interest, and shvia seller, When are they going to be pasul la'edus? Bizman she'ein lo umnus elahi. When that is their only parnasa, their livelihood is built on gambling. They don't have any other job. They gamble for a living. Aval yesh lo umnus shelohi. But if they have an umnus other than that, meaning gambling on the side, right on the weekend, but they have a 9-to-5 job, harei ze kasher. So then that individual is kasher, he is not pasul. Okay, that is a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. A couple of very basic points, but I don't want to dwell on these points right now. This is really a Sanhedrin discussion, and right now, again, the whole reason why we brought this in over here is just to show the Mishnah with the word Amasai. That's the whole reason why we brought this Mishnah over here. But as long as we're here, though, just one very basic point: the gambler. What's the issue with the gambler? So the gambler may be stealing, right? Maybe. In other words, what happens when you sit down and you gamble is, although you may lose and you may give up the money, that wasn't a game plan. Right? Your game plan was that you're going to go sit down at that table and you're going to win money. Okay, so now what happens when you lose money, right? The horrified look of shock, I can't believe it. By the way, believe it. You're right. These casinos open up, so they make money, not the gambler. So, but you sit there now. You lost your money. So now, tell someone's taking money away from you that you never planned on losing. Okay, fine. So now it gets on to the discussion, and it's really and by the way, Tosfos over here spends time talking about this. Meaning, so now we get to a scenario where there was a transfer of money. But you weren't really totally prepared to give up that money, so that may be the profit that comes through non-consent. Okay, so that's the problem with gambling. Okay, it really turns into a lengthier discussion. By the way, the principle is what's called asmachta lokanya, that I was relying on. Quite frankly, me. I was, right? I thought I wasn't going to lose. So therefore, I wasn't really ready to part with that money. Okay, and anyway, that's the issue over there in that Mishnah Sanhedrin. But again, let's just deal with the one point that the Gemara wants to dwell on. We have a Mishnah Sanhedrin, we have a Tanakama, we have a Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda prefaces remarks with the words, Amasai. What should come out over there is that Rav Yehuda is not arguing with the Tanakhama. Okay. And that means then that Mishnah and Sanhedrin that says if you're a gambler, you're a apostle, that's only if you're a full-time gambler. But if you're a part-time gambler, but you have a regular job, a steady job, you're fine. Now, why should that be? So Rashi explains, and it's really the simple pshat, because if you have a 9-to-5 job, so basically you're an upstanding member of society, and you basically understand how the world works. So in other words, the idea is of Rav Yehuda is that if you're gambling all the time, or so he's of the position that that's not stealing, it's not theft, it's not a smachta. In other words, a real transaction was made. The problem is that if all you do is gamble all day, but you're not involved in the quote-unquote the regular world, the real world, so you just don't understand. You don't understand life. And now you're going to be part of a judicial process, and this person was cheated, and you're now expected to make a common sense decision or a common sense observation about people in the real world when you don't quote unquote live in the real world. So you cannot serve as a witness or as a judge. That's the explanation of Rav Yehuda. That's why if you're gambling on the side, but you have a real job, right? You have omnos, you have a real profession. So then you can be part of the judicial process. Okay, but in the meantime, however, what's the problem with all this? So far, it sounds pretty good. The problem is there is a kasha. V'tini ala bebraisa. The problem is that we have the following braisa, and it is chachamim amrim bein she'ein lo omnos elohi ubein she'yesh lo omnos shelohi hareze pasul. The braisa says we have an opinion of right now a non-disclosed tana who says, I don't care whether you have a full-time job or you don't have a full-time job, you cannot be part of the judicial process. That's a braisa of a non-disclosed Tana. The Gemara is assuming right now, well, who is that? It's got to be the Tanakhama. The problem now is that if that's the Tanakhama, Rav Yehuda is arguing with the Tanakhama. But hold on a second. When Rav Yehuda opened up his remarks, he said, Amasai. Which according to everybody means that he's not arguing with the Tanakhama, he's explaining the Tanakhama. So we're kind of stuck right now. Meaning that we know we have this non-disclosed Tanaitic opinion who says that you're always going to be Pasaleidus, even if you're a part-time gambler with a full-time job. You're still not going to be able to testify. So how does that fit in with that Mishnah Sanhedrin where Rav Yehuda, according to everybody, is agreeing with the Tanakhama, so then who's his Braisa? So the Gemara says, Ahi, to Rav Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Tarfonhi. That Braisa is not the Tanakhama of the Mishnah and Sanhedrin. It's another opinion. An opinion that is expressed by Rabbi Tarfon. It happens to be, by the way, as a coincidence, that it's Rabbi Yehuda who reports this position, Rabbi Tarfon. But try not to get confused. I know it's very confusing. It's not Rabbi Yehuda Shita. It's really Rabbi Tarfon Shita. Detanya Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. La'olam ein echad mehem nazir. Lefisha ein naziros ela lahafla. Right, throws this in right in the middle of the discussion. The case that the Bryce is dealing with is the following. Ben and I, or the two Bens, if you will, right, Ben and I see a guy walking towards us. He looks a little disheveled. So Ben and I engage in conversation. Now, we really shouldn't be talking about another person, but Ben and I engage in the following discussion. I say to Ben, you know, I think he's a Nazir. So Ben says, no, he's not a Nazir. He's just a hippie. And we're both of us are so confident in our opinion. I'm saying he's a Nazir, and Ben's saying, no, he's just a hippie. And I'm ready to put my money where my mouth is. And we make a wager. But the stakes of this wager is not going to be money. The stakes of the wager is going to be the following. I say, you know, I'm so confident that he's a Nazir. If I learn otherwise, I'm going to become a Nazir. And Ben says to me, well, I'm so confident he's a hippie. If I learn otherwise, I'll be a Nazir. So basically, we make a bet. Strange scenario. We make a bet, and the stakes of the bet is going to be, if either of us turn out to be wrong, we're going to be a Nazir.
Okay. Is that a vow?
So it's a vow, but predicated on a... right, predicated on a fact that we don't know yet.
It's a prayer.
So it's, well, we'll get to what it is in just a moment. Rabbi Tarfon says, neither of us are going to be a Nazir. Now, one of us has to be right. He's either Nazir or a hippie. Could be both. But I'm saying, he's either Nazir. One of us is going to be right. It doesn't matter. Rabbi Tarfon says, neither Ben nor Ben is going to be a Nazir. Why not? Because it's not a vow. Alma kaven de mesafka le inazir ilo nazirhu lo mishabe nafshe. Because since at the time when we make our utterance, we didn't know, that's not called a neder. A neder is only where at the time of declaration, we know exactly what's going on. In this case, we don't, so therefore it's not going to be a nazir. And now the Gemara, watch this leap the Gemara makes. The Gemara says, that's true by nazirus. That's true by financial transactions as well. When we sit down at the gambling table, do I know I'm going to win? I don't know. Could be, couldn't, could possibly be, I'm going to lose. And since at the time I don't know, so just like by the neder, it's not a neder, so too the financial transaction is not considered a transaction. Therefore, according to this position, Rabbi Tarfon, when you're sitting down and you're wagering, and there's any money that's being transferred, you know what that's called? That's called theft. That's stealing. Therefore, even a part-time gambler can't be fit to testify because that part-time gambler is really, in actuality, stealing. Okay. If he wins, of course. Hachanami, kemen deliyadi, kani lo kani, lo gamar umakne. So therefore, there's not real gemiras das, there's not a real decision in the mind that the money, in fact, is going to be transferred over to somebody else, and so therefore the gambler is really a stealer. So it comes out now, we're fine. Meaning that Mishnah Sanhedrin, the Mishnah Sanhedrin is perfect. I have a Tanakhama, I have a sheet of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda opens up his remarks with Amasai. Didn't we say that everyone agrees that when they say Amasai, it's Eino El Lafarish, it only comes to explain? The Gemara says, well done. Yes, you're right. It's only Eino Lafarish. Rav Yehuda is agreeing with the Tanakhama. What about that Braisa that says even the part-time gambler can't testify? That Braisa is going like Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rabbi Tarfon. Or let me say it even simpler. That Braisa is going like Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says that in the case of Naziris, he's not a Nazir. In the case of gambling, it's not a Kenyan. And therefore, he's of the opinion that every act of gambling is really an act of theft. and that's why you cannot, the part-time gambler can't testify, because really in actuality he's a thief. But the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, Rav Yehuda and Tanakama, are really complementing one another. Rav Yehuda is agreeing and explaining the Tanakama when he opens up with the words Amasai. Okay, that's the, and that, by the way, is just the beginning of the discussion. Right, they obviously engenders a long discussion of, can you gamble? Can you gamble part-time? The halacha lemaisa gets a little bit tricky. If I can give it to you very simply, the Shulchan Aruch says that you can't gamble at all, not even part-time. The Ramah is a mako for the Ashkenazim. But obviously part-time gambler.
So any financial transaction, when you don't know the outcome, is considered stealing.
Right, and now you're gonna ask me about stocks, right? You're gonna ask me about trading futures. Okay, well, okay. The general distinction, and again, this is beyond my scope, but the general distinction is that when you buy a stock, so you're actually buying an equity, meaning where it's going to go in value, go up, go down, you don't know. But there was an actual transaction. You bought equity.
You're a partner.
Right, you are now a partner. And the fate of the company and your fate are now tied together. But you actually bought equity. That's not gambling. Gambling is, you didn't buy anything. In other words, you're wagering with somebody over the outcome. You didn't, right, you don't have equity in it.
You bought a chance.
But you didn't even buy anything. You didn't even buy anything. You just are hoping that, based on the outcome of the game, I'm either going to walk away with a lot of money, and really, I hope, I don't even hope the other. Okay, so that's your basic distinction. Yeah. So in lottery, it's funny. Again, you speak. Don't speak to me. Speak to your local Orthodox rabbi. But lottery also, that argument about the stock is really the same argument about the lottery. You bought a ticket. Now that you bought a ticket, so, right? Well, it may appreciate in value. Right. So that's why lottery also may be more on the side of stock than on the side of gambling. You're taking a risk, but again, everything in life is a risk. But in these cases, though, you're actually buying something, as opposed to the gambling, where you're not buying anything. Okay. Hadron Allah Chalon, that's the end of the seventh parak. Let's begin this morning the eighth parak of Erevin. Okay, so basically, how did the Masechta shape up? Prakim 1 and 2 was about how to make a wall. Parak number 1 in Erevin was how to make a wall for a Mavui. Parak number 2 was how to make makeshift walls as you're traveling. Then we had Prakim 3, 4, and 5, which basically were Erev Tchum. We had Prakim then 6 and 7, Eruv Echatzeros, and now I'd say we're wrapping up the Masechta. I mean, we still have a lot more to go. We have Prakim 8, 9, and 10. But now, the 8th parak of Erevin takes us back to the story of Tchum. But, in other words, why we're going back to Tchum, but in a context in which we just got done discussing. We were discussing being Mishtatef, meaning combining everyone for Erev Chatzeros. We're also now going to speak about Shituf, but Shituf vis-a-vis Tchum. That's a little bit confusing, but it's not so bad. Basically, the idea is as follows. If I want to walk beyond my 2,000 amas, like we've been discussing in the third, fourth, and fifth prakim of the Masechta, so what I have to do is I have to move my makam shvisa. How do I do that? I take food. I now put it in within 2,000 amas of where I am. That allows me to walk towards my food, which is my new point of center, and from the food, another 2,000 amas. Good. That we're all familiar with. Can I make an Erev Tchum for somebody else? Sure. I of course need their consent. I of course need their consent in order to do that. I need to be a shliach. But absolutely, I can do it on behalf of somebody else. So now, observe the Mishnah. The Mishnah discusses the following scenario. Ketzer mishtatfin b'tchumen. How do I do that? In other words, I want to make now a mass Erev Tchum on behalf of myself and behalf of anybody else. And it's really open invitation, meaning I'm going to bring a barrel of wine, lay it down over there, and Anybody who would like to can become part of it. The Mishnah lays down a couple of basic guidelines, restrictions, if you will, in terms of how exactly this is going to work. Number one, says the Mishnah, you can open up it to everyone living in your city, that's fine. And why are we doing it? Because we're going to a Beis HaAvel, or because we're going to a Beis HaMishnah. Meaning, it's clear from the Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to make this point, I'm just foreshadowing the Gemara, it's clear from the Mishnah that the only proper justification of making my Erev Trum is because we're going to be en route to do a mitzvah. Okay, I know we made this point before, but here the Mishnah is very clear about it, because the Mishnah's two examples are going to a Beis HaAvel to do the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim, or Beis HaMishnah to do the mitzvah of Mesameach Chasam V'Kala. In either one of those circumstances, one is allowed to make an Erev Trum. The other restriction, says the Mishnah, is that anyone who wants to be part of this, my open invitation, has to do so before nightfall. Or more accurately, before Bein HaShemashos. Because as we've said time and again, the Erev Trum is kona your new makam shvisa, but only during the Bein HaShemashos period. You cannot discover this Erev Trum after nightfall. Right, you come home from Maariv and you learn, you know, that so-and-so set up an Erev Trum for anybody who wanted to. Oh, if I would have known, I would have joined. It's too late. That's a simple pshat in our Mishnah. It's too late because once it's nighttime, so then you cannot attach yourself to the Erev Trum. Now, Ben, you can ask the question, what about Breira? So the Gemara is going to ask that very question. We'll get to that Gemara in just a moment.
Even if it's before dark, how does he do it?
Yeah, in other words, if he learns about it, in other words, again, the person setting up the Erev Trum, he opened the invitation to anyone who wanted. So now anyone who learns about it before Shabbos can say, good, I want to be part of that. Sounds like a verbal confirmation is all you need. That's what it sounds like in the Mishnah. I don't know otherwise. I'm Rav Yosef and Marvin El Advar Mitzvah. So the first point the Gemara makes is the one which we already noted, and that is that you can only set up an Erev Trum, but it has to be a Ledvar Mitzvah. This takes us back to Daf Lamed Aleph of the Masechta, where the Gemara had that discussion. So my Kamash Lan Tanila Chomishulech LeBeis HaAvel LeBeis HaMishnah. So the Gemara says, it seems pretty obvious from the Mishnah, why do I need Rav Yosef to say what already seems to be self-evident? Ma'u Detem Orcha Demilsa Katani Kamash Malan. I might have thought the Mishnah is throwing out examples, but not being restrictive. So Kamash Malan, no. The Mishnah is in fact being restrictive. That the only way you can make an Erev Trum is for the purpose of a mitzvah.
Can you
Yeah, so that's a great discussion. The answer is yes. The Gemara in Moed Katan says that the Chachamim were kind of ambiguous about it. In other words, Shabbos is not the appropriate time to do Nicham Avelim.
Yeah.
Right. Let's see. It's a great starting point for the discussion. Meaning, it's Shabbos. Shabbos. We shouldn't get bogged down with bad news and bad emotions. Right. Point very well taken. On the other hand, there's a person who currently is sitting Shiva, meaning, and so he needs comfort. So I'm not going to do a good job quoting the Gemara. I'm doing it off the top of my head, but Okay, I wish I could say the Gemara better. I'll paraphrase in English. It wasn't easy for the Chachamim to allow Nicham Avelim on Shabbos, but they did so anyway, knowing that the person who needed the comfort, and so therefore the Chachamim were matir, right? Lo bekal hitir Chachamim, okay, something like that. Anyway, right. They allowed it. They allowed Nicham Avelim. When you go there, the Nusach is going to be a little bit different. Right? You don't say Hamakom Yinachem Eschem, but you say, I should know the Nusach also. Anyway, the Nusach is a little bit different in terms of what you say. It's kind of like, you know, by Refuah Shlema. You say, you know, Shabbos Yimel Izok. Okay. There's another Nusach that you say for Nicham Avelim on Shabbos. Okay. The short answer is yes, you could do Nicham Avelim, but the question is very well placed. Okay, next point of the Gemara. It's clear from the Mishnah that there's no Breira. right? Because the Mishnah says that if you learn about it after Shabbat started, so it's too late. What do you mean too late? Can't I retroactively go back and say, had I known I want to be part of it? So the Mishnah says no. So the Gemara, again, makes a very simple deductive conclusion of our Mishnah. We don't hold a Breira. So Amar Avashi, Hodi'uhu V'lo Hodi'uhu Ketani. So what you could do with our Mishnah, now I'm not sure, is he changing the Mishnah? Or is he just reinterpreting the Mishnah? I always have that stuff in my mind. Either way, the point being, is that what the Mishnah means is, either he learns about it, or he doesn't learn about it. If he learns about it, and even Friday night, he can attach himself to the Eruv, and if he never knows it, and if he never learns about it, so therefore he can't attach himself. It's a little bit strange. If he never learns about it, he can't attach. Meaning he just never knows, he never heard about it. But anyway, but that's how you can understand the Mishnah, and maybe the Mishnah subscribes to the concept of Breira. Amar Ravasi Katan, Ben Shesh Yotze Be'erev Imo. Okay, the remainder of the daf today, I don't think we're going to get to the end of the discussion, but let's at least begin the discussion. Okay, a Katan Ben Shesh, a six-year-old. Okay, basically preschool. Right, kindergarten, right, first grade, six years old. I should know these things. So the katan ben sheish yotze be'erev imo. Anyway, if mom sets up an erev tchum, so her 4-year-old, her 5-year-old is attached to her. So even without pronouncing the tchum is for her child as well, it's going to be for her child. So says Rav Asi.
Why is this discussion?
Yeah, we could have had this discussion anywhere in the 3rd, 4th, or 5th parak.
And what does it do with this Mishnah?
What does it have to do with this Mishnah? That's a legitimate question. I don't know the answer. Okay. Right. We are talking about communal Arabs. Okay. Anyway, so the child is attached to mom. Now, Tosos over here, it's a great Tosos. It's a bottom Tosos on the Amud. Tosos over here says, wait a second. You can only make an Erev Tchum for the purpose of a mitzvah. What mitzvah is there for the 5-year-old? Okay, well, say, good. That's the answer I was kind of expecting, but if you look at the Bam Tosfos, he actually gives two answers to this question. Alpha gav de'ein ma'arvin elo dvar mitzvah, mikoma kom yotze katan be'erev imo, de'i esher la lahanicho, mishum de'kruch acharel. So Tosus' first answer is the child is an appendage to the mother. Okay, not a physical appendage, but an emotional appendage to the mother. At 5 years of age, at 4 years of age, right, the child basically can't be without mom. So that's one answer. In other words, according to the first answer, there's no chinuch. It's just what mom can't leave without the kid. Inami, well, that's it's also true. Inami. And then Tosas kind of like backs up into this second answer, which is, oh, and also there's this idea of chinuch, meaning train the child how to do mitzvahs. Isn't it interesting? Meaning, I also, like Phil, would have immediately turned to the chinuch and saying, of course there's a mitzvah called chinuch. And Tosas kind of like backs himself up to it after already giving the first answer, which is, well, the child's kind of an attachment to the mother. And then Tosas says, as a second point, also, there's a point of chinuch to consider.
The second sukkah had this thing about kids, but the age was 7.
Right. So maybe right. So a number of reasons why this chinuch comes as almost like a second thought of Tosfos, which it literally is.
Because the chinuch is 16.
Correct. So number one, right. Good. So number one, he's really young, meaning 4 or 5 years of age. To say that there's chinuch, there's also another point to consider, which. Which is the following. The mitzvah of chinuch is on the father or on the mother? I know, right, we're apt to say both, and I know, practically speaking, mom does more chinuch than dad does. Okay, which shouldn't be, but it's just, you know, it's my right. But it's interesting, you can make the argument, and there are sources for this, that the primary mitzvah of chinuch is on dad, not on mom. So, right, another reason, possible reason why Tosos gives this as a second thought, not as a first thought. Okay, let's just Let's just do a little bit more for today, and we'll have to stop. So cut and chain serchlim chaybe. I'm sorry. So yotzeber. I'm sorry. Cut ben sheish yotzeber v'imo. Meisvei cut and chain serchlim o yotzeber v'imo v'shein serchlimo ein yotze be'erav imo. Okay, it depends whether the child needs mom or doesn't need mom. Utana nami gabi sukkah ki agavna cut and chain serchlim o chaybe sukkah v'havinam ba. Ezu cut and chain serchlim o. So now we're going to get to ages. When does a child no longer need his mother? The Gemara is going to try to give developmental stages of when the child is considered now not a toddler, but someone who now is, again, not certainly not an adult, but now in the stage where it's appropriate to be mechanechem. So number one, when he no longer needs to be wiped by his mother. Rabbi Shimon, right, toilet train. Rabbi Shimon, lakash amar kol shener ve'enu kare ima ima. Wakes up in the middle of the night, doesn't start screaming for his mother. So, sakadacha gedolam nami karalei ima. The Gemara says, what do you mean? 8 years of age, 9 years of age, wakes up in the middle of the night, cries for mom. Kol shener mishnah sov ve'enu kare ima ima. I'm sorry. So, ima, sorry, I'm sorry. Ela ima kol shener mishnah sov ve'enu kare ima ima. Meaning, right. It wakes up in the middle of the night and repeatedly calls for his mother. Meaning, calls for mom once. Mom's not coming. Okay, I'll go back to bed. But it repeatedly calls mom for mom. So that's a kan hatsarich le'ima. The kama, and here's the kicker. Kibar arba, kibar chamesh. So, about 4 years of age, about 5 years of age. Now, we can't give, there's no standardized shear. We're talking about developmental stages. Everyone develops at a slightly different rate. So basically, we're talking about four or five. So, but what comes out, however, is that once you're past the point of five, meaning you're 6 years of age, sounds like, according to everybody, you are now an independent. You understand, I mean independent over here. Obviously, you're 6 years of age. But in other words, you're no longer considered an attachment to mother. You're no longer dependent on mom. So now, the question is a very simple one. The statement of Rav Asi was that when you're cut and ben sheish, you're still attached. What we just established now is that four and five, maybe.
Davening is going to begin now. Please make your way to davening.
But at 4 and 5 you're attached. But once you're 6, you're no longer an attachment of mom, and so that obviously creates the problem. And so, kama kabar arba kabar. I'm sorry. Amr Vishur Bereder Rav Idi Ki Kama Rav Asi Kigon. She irav alav aviv letzafon v'ima ledarom. So the Gemara says, well, Rav Asi was talking about a more specific scenario. Dad was ma'ariv the child one way, and mom was ma'ariv the child another way. They're pulling the kid in different directions. But here we mean that literally. Da'afilo bar sheish nami b'tzafsa d'ima nichalei. At 6 years of age, right? Who does he want, mom or dad? Okay, the answer is going to be mom. In other words, that's what Rav Asi is telling us. Okay. And we'll pause over here. Not a great place to pause, but we'll pause over here. We'll finish up the discussion, God willing, tomorrow. Okay, we finished up the seventh parak of Erevin today, discussing the Zach L'Adam Shalom B'Fanav, the halachas like Rav Yehuda, the questions of when Rav Yehuda says, Ei Masayir B'Medra Mamurim, coming to explain the Mishnah, arguing with the Mishnah, and then we started the eighth parak of Erevin today, Shituf by Erev Tchum, making an Erev Tchum for the whole community. It can be done with some qualifications, and now we're in the middle of discussing a child as an attachment of the mother. Rabbi Chanan Ren Akashomer, I'm sorry, Le'ilui, sorry, Fuwa Shlema for Binyamin Zevakon Meshon Rivka, for Rafal Zaka Avram and Yakir Abigail, from Makavat Sarah, and Le'ilui Nishmas. Rav Yaakov ben Yosef. Rav Chanan ben Akash Amar Zekosh Baruch Hu Zakar Yisrael Fichach Hirbam Torah Mitzvah Shenamar Anach Havetz Amantzi Ko Yagdil Torah Yadir.